Welcome to The Ether. Today is Monday, January 24th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra and is the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol and is refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes. Check out their website at wefund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates their support. Today on The Ether, we have the Sand Clock Dev Space. Let's take a listen.
Welcome to this Twitter Spaces. I'm really excited. I've said it before on here. I really enjoy Twitter Spaces, and I think it's a really intimate and casual and fun opportunity to talk to you all and kind of hear from you and maybe field some questions and kind of give you a chance to get inside of our brains and maybe a little bit of a chance for us to get inside of your brains as well. So today we are here with myself, Elizabeth, and also Cristiano, of course, and Gabriel. So if you don't know Gabriel, I'll let him introduce himself, but I've kind of been referring to him as one of SoundClock's technical masterminds. Very, very, very smart person and really good at what he does. So he's been kind of at the forefront of leading some of the problems we've been working through and really building SoundClock along with our team. So I'm excited to have him here. And if anybody has technical questions today as well, like he'll be here to answer them and just join him generally on the conversation. So Gabriel, if you want to introduce yourself now.
Hello. I wasn't expecting to have to introduce myself, but yeah, I'm Gabriel, I'm a developer. I've been doing it for many years. I joined SandClock a long time ago, now that I think of it. And I've been working on a lot of things, but mostly on the smart contracts and the vault and the security and the money diffusion and all of that. And it's been one of the most interesting challenges I have in my career. So hopefully I will be able to share some of my learnings with you today as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gabriel. We're so excited to have you here. I will say, like, Gabriel has very much become a very good friend of mine and Cristiano's. He knows Ella, our dog, and knows her in real life, I should say. So it's always fun to get to talk to him. Chris, do you want to introduce yourself very quickly? Most people probably know who you are, but just say hello.
Hi, everyone. I'm Cristiano, co-founder of SoundClock, and like Elizabeth said, we've been working on this in person over the last couple of days, and it's stressful, but also very exciting. And let's see what the future will hold, but it's quite promising.
Awesome. So thanks, Chris. Really quickly, maybe not so quickly. It'll probably be a big chunk of what we talk about today. I want to address what is probably the elephant in the room, which is our delay, our launch delay, and the article that came out last week. So the first thing that I personally want to say is that we are very, very, very sorry for this delay. And, you know, it's one of those situations where, like, we all stand by the decision we made. We all stand by this delay. But I think that we made a lot of mistakes in setting a deadline for ourselves, especially pre-audit, not knowing what would come up and what we would find. And that's a large part of, like, you know, you've seen, like, we're reinventing deadlines. That's why. And it's like, I know there's a lot of disappointment with that, and people want to know when things are happening. And that's one of the reasons that we're opening up our GitHub and we're going to open our Notion. And we originally set our Jira, but I think Notion is going to be, we use both, and I think Notion will be clearer for you all. It'll just be more explicit about what's actually going on. But that's why we want to do that, so that while we're not setting a deadline and we're not prepared to say, like, we're going to launch on this day, we're trying to give you all the opportunity to still follow along with our progress and know what's going on our end. And of course, you can always ask as well, but, you know, ask for updates, and we'll give updates always, but that's kind of where we're coming from. And, you know, I'll say, like, this week we met with Gabriel and a whole bunch of other people on our team, mostly from the tech side. And, like, we were sitting in the office, we did an in real life meeting, and we were sitting in the office, and Gabriel's telling us, like, we have this problem and we have to really, I really want to resolve this before we launch. And, you know, we were going back and forth about a whole bunch of things. And is it really necessary? And, you know, what would happen if we didn't resolve this and we launched with this and things like that. And, you know, Cristiano was sitting next to me, and he's, like, searching on his computer for other projects that do something similar to us, that split principal and yield and then subdivide it, you know, however you want. And, like, we realized there are no other projects that have done this. There is no reference point. There is no example. We can't look at.
I should clarify that our projects that do split principal from yield, for instance, our DAI is one of them. That is actually the closest project to SunClock. But upon a closer inspection, you realize that the yield claiming mechanism is discrete, and you can only claim once, whereas SunClock's mechanism is continuous. So for as long as the principal is generating yield, a user on the other side or a contract can claim that yield continuously until that principal gets withdrawn. So obviously our DAI is a honorable mention, but it's not even comparable. Would only allow for a single claim. Then you have a couple of others, but the others that do this, they're very, how should I put it? The computation that happens after is very much like you can DCA or you can send your yield, but it's all or nothing. It's 100% of your yield in order to perform a single action. And that is not what we want at SunClock. We want more modularity, more flexibility, more automation. And there aren't any projects like SunClock. They simply do not exist. And so in hindsight, it was very naive to set a deadline when we're developing something that does not exist. We cannot pull inspiration from other projects because they're not there. The components are not there. And yeah, I'm going to pass the mic back to Elizabeth. Sorry for interrupting.
No, I'm glad you also mentioned that. Thank you, Cristiano. But, you know, we just had kind of this moment of, like, we're all sitting in the office, like, talking about this, stressed, of course, you know, disappointed. And we had this moment where we're like, on one end, we're like, crap, like, we have no one to reference with this. No one's doing quite what we're doing. And so we can't look at someone else's code or even reach out to another team and ask for kind of their guidance or an idea of how they approached these problems. And, you know, it was kind of, that was a bit, like, disappointing. But on the other side of things, we also were looking at this, you know, after we had a chance to kind of reflect a bit, we're like, okay, that's a good thing. Like, it sucks that we don't have kind of a reference point, to base our own work off of. But on the other hand, that means we are really doing something innovative, and we are doing something new and different and something that hasn't been done before quite like this. And that's exciting in and of itself. So yeah, it was just a really like, I think we were all feeling this like disappointment, and also really like, okay, like we're doing something good and something that is gonna make a difference and have a strong impact and isn't just gonna be a repeat of other projects or a fork of something else. So Gabriel, what about you? Because you were in that meeting, like what was kind of going, maybe you were just stressed and and nervous, but what was kind of going through your mind during that meeting?
Yeah, it was complicated. I had a lot of ideas. Like we were doing a lot of meetings and also had some solutions I wanted to try out. So I was with a lot in my head. But yeah, going back to what Cristiano was saying, I think that was the most important thing for us to talk about, which is like the thing we are building, like some projects do something of it, but there's no project that combines everything into one thing. And that's the big issue. And my concern was really with the deadline, to be honest, during that meeting. Like, I knew it would be impossible for us to deliver something with confidence in the deadline that we have. And yeah, that's what I was thinking about, Tom, just that.
Yeah, definitely get that. And this kind of goes back to like the fact that, first of all, security is really, really, really important to us. Like we've said this since the beginning and since the start of when we started building, like we're not going to launch unaudited. We're not going to launch with bugs. We're not going to take those risks because the way that we see it is, first of all, it's really like I don't think any of us could sleep at night. Second of all, it would be really wrong to all of you who want to use the product to pretty much knowingly put you in a situation where maybe your money won't get lost, but maybe it will. And we won't be able to, you know, prevent that with our current work. And so there's those things. And then also like we kind of decided like we'd much rather deal with, you know, securing our product now than dealing with some really bad fallout where people get hurt later on. And like that's kind of where we're saying like, yeah, we regret setting a deadline. We regret holding ourselves to a certain date, but we don't regret the delay. The delay was a decision that I do think we all stand by because it was the right decision for this situation. And I think everybody on our team agrees that with that. And I think I'd much rather delay it now than deal with fallout later on. So that's kind of, hopefully that gives you some insight into like our thought process and where that decision came from. And also kind of how we're changing things in the future and how we're going to better handle deadlines and timelines and roadmaps and things of that sort. And, you know, all in order to put out a product that we're really proud of. And something I personally kind of learned from this experience, and maybe I knew it before, but it was really solidified because of this, is that like it is really not us versus you. It really is not the team, any team really, versus the community. Like we are collectively working toward the same thing. We are all working toward, you know, producing a really incredible product that is going to help a lot of people and have a big impact on a lot of people's lives. And hopefully your life maybe, right? And our own lives too. Like it's a product that I anticipate using myself. So for me at least, like that was a huge takeaway and a huge, when I kind of reflected on the response from all of you and how it felt after this really disappointing news, I just was like, wow, we're really with the community. Like we're feeling this disappointment right by the community side. You were all disappointed. We were disappointed. We were having like basically the same emotions, right? We were going through like the same emotional roller coaster together. And at the end of the day, why were we all in this together? Because we were all working toward the same goal. We all want to see this really incredible product that is going to be SoundClock. So that was a huge takeaway for me. How about you, Cristiano and Gabriel? Like, were you guys feeling kind of similarly?
Yeah, I was, I wasn't necessarily disappointed. I was mostly, I was disappointed in myself for being unable to, there could be issues that would require over 1 week to solve, because ultimately that was the problem. And you live and you learn. That was just my lack of engineering experience, I guess. But now that I've been through it, I'm much better equipped to lead Sandclock and make good decisions going forward. I'm not perfect. No one is. We all make mistakes, and we are learning. And I tried to position myself in my future self's shoes, and thinking, how will I feel about this event a year from now? And frankly, I don't think I'm going to have very strong feelings about it. It's just a minor delay. It happens to lots and lots of projects, good, bad, all kinds of them. Ethereum is probably the worst offender when it comes to this. They too are innovating tremendously. And the merge was supposed to happen in January, if I recall correctly, from August, and here we are. And we all want the innovation to come as fast as possible, and sometimes it's not possible, but it will get here, and when it does, we'll be much better off than if the teams had rushed and delivered an unpolished product.
Yeah, I think you make really good points, and I also really like what you said about when you look back in a year from now, how are you going to view this situation? And on the flip side, like, I just keep thinking, like, imagine if there were an exploit in that time. And you look back in a year from now, and how would you look back on an exploit that you knew could have been prevented if you had taken the time to correct the problem? Like, that's kind of is what I'm personally always going back to, is like, yeah, if I'm going to reflect on this in a year, what situation do I want to be reflecting on? A delay or an exploit? So, and sometimes exploits are unavoidable. Even audited projects get exploited. But if we know that there is a weak spot, then we want to correct it before we launch an unpolished product. So, like I said, I hope that like gives you guys some insight into what we've kind of been thinking about in the last week and what went into this decision. And, I think like, I also hope that you all as the community, like, you know that we're not unwilling to share these decisions with you and like share the thought process. If you are in our Discord, you probably see a lot of that. Like I at least, and Cristiano will jump in. Sometimes we try to explain some of these decisions to you all. And if you ever like feel like it wasn't explained, you can always ask in the Discord or on Twitter or something, because we do think about these things a lot. And also we also talk to our team a lot. Like last week, there were a lot of conversations that happened with Gabriel and the rest of our team around this. And it was a very, very, I wouldn't say difficult decision. I think it was very, it felt very intuitive to us. Like this is the best choice. This is the safest, most secure option. But it was a very sad, disappointing decision, which inherently makes it more difficult. So that's kind of,
do you want to say something? I think we'll become a much stronger project because of this, because we're improving our processes. We are not committing to hard deadlines. Like we still have deadlines, internal deadlines, for specific components, but in terms of like when the product will launch, there is a very probabilistic deadline, as you saw in the article. Like we have a time range, and then we have a likelihood of it happening. And this is a much more continuous perspective, as opposed to a discrete one whereby you have a hard deadline, and it's like it's this specific day at this specific time, and if you don't meet the deadline, then people will panic, and they will panic because there is uncertainty, and perhaps the team cannot meet the expectations, perhaps something else happened, perhaps there's turmoil, but whatever the cause may be, we don't know, so we don't want that. And obviously, in order to fix this, we decided to revamp the way that we handle deadlines. And we also decided to make our workflow a lot more transparent, which is probably something we should have done, a couple of months ago, I suppose. But I am happy that we're doing it now. And, we are fairly transparent. We like to disclose the entirety of our decision making processes whenever we make a decision, or we ask for your opinion as well. But now you will be able to get a more zoomed in perspective on what we're doing, and hopefully we'll also encourage some of you to contribute, either with code or something else, because obviously there is a lot of space for...
Yeah, totally agree. And something you also said, Cristiano, you said that things like this ultimately make SoundClock an even better product. And I love that. And I also think that this situation, at least in my opinion, has made not only our team a stronger team because of lessons we learned, and also adversity does typically bring people closer. I feel like it's been brought our team even closer. And really, we were in a team meeting today, and I was kind of telling our team, like, I really could see how we all had each other's backs, and we were all supporting each other. And even like people who had, people from biz dev were like talking to the tech team, the tech side, like saying, how can we help? And people from tech were talking to biz dev saying, like, what can we do to help you with the announcement and getting information out? Like, just really, it was awesome to see that everybody kind of coming together and all for SoundClock, like, because we all have the same goal. And then I'd also say that, like, I also kind of think that this made our community stronger in some ways. Like, I really feel like it made people reflect a lot on, like, what they care about when they think about SoundClock. What do they want when they think about SoundClock? What matters to them with regards to SoundClock? And, I think that, like, I hope, and I, from the messages I received and what I've seen, like, I think a lot of people were like, yeah, like, this is, I want a secure product. I want a product that's going to last for another 10 years, another 100 years, that institutions can feel safe putting their money with, all of these things that we've talked about. And in that way, I actually think it really strengthened our community as well, which was really, like, a little cheesy, but it was kind of, like, cool to see and a little bit beautiful, maybe. Like, I just felt like there was a lot of growth as a product, as a team, for SoundClock, and also as a community, and also together with, like I said, I just felt like I reflected and I thought, wow, we're right by the community side with this. I'm feeling exactly what they're feeling right now. So that's kind of my reflections, and Cristiano's reflections, and Gabriel's reflections. But having said that, Cristiano or Gabriel, unless you guys have specific things you want to talk about, I would love to kind of open it up to you all. And if anybody has questions or comments or things they want to talk about, I said, Gabriel's here, so you can get pretty technical and he'll really be able to dive into that if that's what you guys want to hear about. I know somebody had requested to speak earlier, and I just ignored it for the time being, but If you request to speak now, I will give you the floor. And if not, that's okay. We can probably keep ranting for a while, I think. All right, I'm going to keep talking. And if you request, I will just add you and you can talk. So I guess, like, just to go back to, like, what's going to change in the future, the main thing is transparency. And like Cristiano said, like, there are things that we look back and we're like, why didn't we do this sooner? Like, why didn't we make our work process more transparent? I think, like, also there has been, we've talked about this in the past, we're always, I will say, we're a bit paranoid about, you know, basically having our product copied before we even have a chance to launch. That is something that we think about. And I think it's important to think about that in this space. And I think maybe that has contributed a bit to, like, I don't think we're particularly hidden and closed off from you all. I like to think we're somewhat transparent and we've been transparent, but to really, like, make that push toward transparency, which in my opinion is ultimately a push toward decentralization as well. So that's why we're opening up our work process and our workflow. So you can, like, pretty much follow along with us and see what we're doing and see where we're at in the process. And also adding more UX testers. There were a lot of people who were excited to test the UX and haven't had a chance. And also, like, we had one phase of UX testing and it went really well, got a lot of positive feedback. But we also had, you know, one or two things that we made somewhat significant changes to, and no one outside of our team has tested those yet. So I think
based on the community's feedback, you should mention that big change was due to round one of user testing. So you are also shaping the direction of SoundClock.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Cristiano. You're right. Like, it was feedback that we specifically got in our first phase of UX testing from our UX testers, from you all, and we made a pretty significant change, one in particular, based on that. So no one outside of our team has tested it again. And, like, this is kind of one of those instances where we feel pretty good about it and we could probably launch with that current UX, and we would have if our code was ready. But because it's not, it's kind of like another gift, if you will. It's some unexpected time that we get to curate it even more and work on it even more and get more people involved in the testing process and even just viewing process. Like, we have a lot more people who will test, but also, like, I think we're going to include some people just to get to view it and view the dashboard, for example. No one outside of our team has seen the final version of the dashboard. We did release, like, a kind of preliminary version one of it, but it's been ramped up quite a bit since then. So we're definitely going to release that soon. We also have our website getting built right now. Like, as we speak, our website is being built. It's really gorgeous. I'm really excited. I hope it comes together, you know, as beautifully as what the design has been and what the design looks like. And if it does, I mean, even if it doesn't, even if it's a fraction of our design, I think it's going to be awesome. A lot of the big theme of kind of quartz and those crystals and the idea of breaking it up and also empowering you, because I really like this idea that SoundClock works for you and it works to empower you. So those are a couple of things that are kind of in the process. Oh, I see a request. Tyler, I'm going to give you the floor. Okay, go ahead. Tyler is connecting, but then he will be on with us. Hey, Tyler.
Oh, hey, can you hear me now?
Okay. Yes, you are all
so
good.
I had a quick question. So obviously there was the delay and you don't want to set timelines. Do you have a rough estimate? Is this like a 1 month delay or a 8 month delay, or do you have any idea of estimation of, like, what quarter it might come in?
So, you know, I'm like, how do I phrase this without actually having to be held to this?
I just don't know if this is a, like, oh, it's going to take us a year to fix this and rewrite a bunch of code, or this is a, you know, just for this one issue. It's not a relatively large fix.
No, I think it's a totally valid question, though. I'm just sitting here like, how do I phrase this? But I think I would say that from what we've discussed and what we currently know, I think it's probably realistic to say a few months. I think 1 year is like out there. I would be really, really, really shocked if it was like 1 year or 8 months from now. I think probably at least
it's part of the roadmap that we launched on Medium. I mean, like I said, the deadlines, they still exist. They're just probabilistic, meaning we don't commit to launching until we actually know that we have a product that is ready. So, for instance, let's say we finish SandClock tomorrow, and now we can set a hard deadline. But until we do, we will only have soft deadlines and that are rooted in probability. And that is the first image of the Medium article. You can see the plans listed chronologically, and also it at the top it says like Q1 2022, and then the probability of it launching SandClock in Q1 of 2022 is high.
Yeah, so that's kind of how we're doing it, and I personally am of the opinion, especially after what happened last week and the delay, I'm very much of the opinion that, like, I don't think we will release a date until we actually have a functioning product. So what I mean by that is that we, like, of course, we're going to give you these timelines and these roadmaps and these probabilistic deadlines, as Cristiano refers to them. But probably we won't give you an actual date or a really, like, good kind of estimate until we're at a point where we could launch that very day. So if tomorrow we woke up and we were like, we can launch today, maybe we set a deadline, or rather we set a launch date for 2 weeks out from there, or a month out from there, or something like that, to give us some time to market and, you know, kind of get some publicity and things like that. But probably until that point, like, because I think our biggest mistake too, well, not maybe not our biggest mistake, but a big mistake we made was setting a deadline before we actually had our audit and had a chance to look at it. And like, Code Arena is awesome. Like, so we have been really impressed. Honestly, if you have a project and you need an audit on it, highly, highly recommend Code Arena. There were so many really, really interesting things found, ways to improve our product, things like that. Cause, you know, sometimes in audits, it's usually even more so than finding bugs and finding like problems. A lot of times you find ways that you can improve it. So things that might not necessarily have to be changed, but they're really nice to have, and they'll improve your product quite a bit and the way it functions. So we had a lot of that. And because you have so many eyes on your product with Code Arena, which is the goal, it's what makes it such a fantastic method for auditing, you have so much stuff to sort through, like so many things, way more than you would typically see with like a regular auditing firm or auditing company. So that kind of, yeah, so that I think was a big part of it, is that like we didn't anticipate how many things we'd see, even just to improve upon and things of that sort. So I definitely think in terms of deadlines, like once we have a functioning product and we are ready to say like we could launch this very day, then we will set a good good time frame for us. Yeah, hope that answers your question, Tyler. Thanks. If anybody else has any other questions or comments, we'll be happy to answer them. I feel like at this point, maybe I'm talking too much to you all. I don't know. Maybe it's a good conversation though, but, yeah, if anybody else has any other comments or questions about anything maybe that was in the Medium article. And if you haven't read that yet, highly recommend. It really goes in depth about our plans. Hi, Matish. I see you are requesting to speak. And I also see Will. I'll give you a chance after. And first we'll do Matish. Okay. You are connecting, Matish, and then you can speak. Hello.
Yeah, hi. So I wanted to ask, how is your daughter, first of all?
Well, she may as well be our daughter. It's actually our dog, Ella. If you look around, even on our SandClock mediums, you can find some cute photos of her, but she's doing so well, Matish. Thank you for asking. She's actually doing she had double elbow surgery. So she had surgery on both of her elbows for elbow dysplasia, which is basically like hip dysplasia, but it's of the elbows. And they said she'd probably be in pain for a few days and not want to walk. And she's been like moving totally normally, like playing, having fun, going for walks. Right now she's dead asleep in front of the fireplace though, but but she's doing great, Matish. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I saw Cristiano writing that going under surgery, so I thought, let me ask once again.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about, Matish?
No.
It's okay if not too, but
no, thank you.
Just wanted to be a nice, this is what I'm talking about though. Like, guys, this is the SoundCloud community. Like, Matish hopped on here just to ask about our dog who had surgery on Friday. So this is, I think this is a perfect example of like, and the number of messages I got about this and also about just generally supporting our decision and stuff, like really reflects well on this community and makes me feel really, really good about the people who are in this community. So thank you. Okay, so in the meantime, I see Will has requested to speak. Will, I'm going to put you up here and you're connecting now and then you'll be able to speak with us.
Hi. Right. Oh, hi, Elizabeth. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Will. Hello.
Hey, welcome. Great. Thank you. I just had a question about sort of once you've launched. So I can see in the, and I guess about the yield strategies, sort of when you first launch, and I can see in the timeline that there are sort of a couple of upgrades planned a few quarters down the line with sort of other sort of maybe perhaps slightly riskier strategies. So I guess my question is sort of what sort of, if I'm putting UST onto the platform after you've launched, what sort of yields could I expect from that? And then also, you know, assuming everything remains the same, you know, further down the line when you launch those other strategies, what might they offer? And then do you also have plans to sort of make it a bit less of a black box in terms of, you know, if someone's coming to the platform and you're trying to sort of accelerate sort of mass adoption of it, some sort of layman's explanations of how those yields might be generated? Thanks.
We will, on the Ethereum side, you know, Ethereum right now is quite expensive to use. So our current strategies are one strategy for Ethereum is the low risk one. It deposits to Anchor Protocol using the wormhole bridge. And you can expect to get the 20% yield plus the sponsored yield once we start collecting fees. And then further down the line, once we release on Terra, because Terra is cheaper to use, and also you can, the smart contract language is a little more expressive, we are going to launch that are a lot more advanced than what you typically see from yield aggregators. These strategies are going to use Mirror Protocol and Anchor, but Anchor is as a fallback, and also because Mirror Protocol, you can mint, you can short an asset using a CDP, a collateralized debt position. And this CDP obviously requires collateral. The collateral that we want to use is going to be AUST, so Anchor's UST. So the collateral itself is generating yields, which helps a little bit in terms of managing your position, because you don't necessarily want to get liquidated, as that would result in a penalty. So the low risk strategy on Terra is going to be around 30-35% yield, relatively risk-free, because like I said, it is delta neutral. We short an asset and we long it at the same time, and we collect funding, we collect mirror rewards, and we also collect the yield from Anchor Protocol that we use to short the asset. So that is quite nice. Then going up the risk scale, you'll have like a moderate risk strategy that is quite similar. It is supposed to be a pseudo delta neutral strategy, but So we short an asset, and then we, instead of longing, we provide liquidity such that it is almost delta neutral, but you can still incur some impermanent loss. And that one is quite nice because, again, you get more mirror rewards, and you also collect trading fees. So that one you can expect, like, I would say at least 45%. But, you know, the thing with these strategies that rely on yield farming and also trading fees, so the trading fees are based on the volume, and the mirror rewards are based on, in this case, the premium at which the assets are trading. So if an asset is not trading at a premium, positive or negative, then the rewards are lower. And the higher the discrepancy between Oracle price and current price, the more we make. Because SunClock automates that asset selection for you, so that you don't necessarily end up crashing the yield for a very specific pair of assets, we will be exposed to a wide array of assets, and the yield is unlikely to suffer tremendously. However, because it is because the rewards are paid out in mirror tokens, we are vulnerable, of course, to, you know, mirror protocol's emission schedule. We are also exposed to mirror's price. So if mirror goes up in price, then obviously the APY goes up as well, provided that they do not change the emissions rate. And then, of course, you have like one last strategy, which is the highest risk that you can take, which basically just automates the selection of assets and provides liquidity, like I said, to a couple of them. The algorithm determines which ones are best, and it also excludes a couple of them. It applies some other rules. For instance,
Cristiano, you just cut out. Chris, are you there? Let me see, because Cristiano is a not very great Android, and the speakers often give him trouble. So let me check up on him. Okay, it's okay. Chris is going to talk on my phone.
Stop. What? Where did I? Oh, okay. So it applies a couple of rules in order to exclude a couple of assets that may not be desirable. Or, for instance, you don't want to have over 10% of a given vault, because then if you want to pull out and liquidate your position, you might end up destroying that value and generating a lot of MEV, which is suboptimal for value capture. Now, in terms of what the future holds for SunClock, once we move to Starknet, and, you know, this is still a ways away because Starknet is still in alpha, all L2s are still very much in development. But the way I see things is SunClock is just going to be routing liquidity to different money markets and applying these algorithms in order to best utilize your capital and generate yields and unlocking the programmability of this yield. So this addresses the question about yield. You also asked, how can we make this less of a black box? And we do this through our interface. If you want, you can DM SunClock and ask to be part of the user testing so that you can see firsthand. But our interface is unlike anything you've ever seen in this space, at least. It tries to declutter and simplify things and hide a lot of the complexity. But we don't want it to be a black box while also wanting it to be simple. So we allow people to get more details by expanding certain elements, or when it comes to the strategies, we actually provide an overview. So, for instance, it will say low risk, and then it has like a little icon, and you click on the icon, and it gives you a detailed description of what the strategy entails. So if you don't necessarily care, like you went to a bank and you deposited money and you don't necessarily care how they're going to invest it, then you can just do that. But if you actually want the overview of the strategy, then we'll also have that for you on the interface.
Great, thanks. That's really helpful. I'd love to get involved on the testing side if possible. I'll send a DM. I also just like to say I used to have a three-legged collie who lived a long and happy life, but I'm glad that Ella has all of her legs still intact.
Oh my gosh, yes. That excites me. I love meeting other collie owners and border collie owners. That makes me really happy to hear. Cool. That was a really good question, by the way, Will. So thank you for that. Both two really good questions. All right. So I have Cristiano requesting to speak. So because his phone crashed, and I also see Crypto Beetle. So Crypto Beetle, I'm connecting you now, and it'll take a minute for you to connect, but then you can hop up here. You'll be.
Hey, can you hear me?
Hey, yeah, we can hear you.
Awesome. I just want to first of all say good job to the team. I think I've been looking at Quartz for a while now and seeing how you guys have developed over time, and I'm hugely impressed. And even with the delay, I personally, as a future user, would rather that there is a delay because you guys would like to be confident in the product before it's delivered, right? It would be a shame if it was delivered early and it didn't live up to the expectations that were set. I just kind of wanted to really ask you guys to just elaborate on what you think the impact Quartz will have on the broader DeFi market will be. For those who, I guess, aren't too familiar, and for myself as well, because I think it's really important to highlight that. So,
can you elaborate a little bit on that, on the question? Sorry.
Yeah, more so, what do you expect? Like, what do you expect this product to have on the broader market, the effect on how people will start to interface with DeFi?
Yes. Okay, let's hope that my Twitter doesn't crash again. It does that all the time, unfortunately. As for the impact, so I view this new, I view SandClock as the place that will enable people to create new primitives. So in terms of value accrual for tokens, for instance, I see DAOs using SandClock as a way to use their treasury in order to create yield that will then be used to purchase their tokens on the open market. And thereby correlating a protocol's treasury with its token. So this is number one. I also see these organizations using their treasuries for payroll. So the yield itself would be the payroll. A couple of cool ones: lossless subscription services. So, for instance, you're able to pledge your principal to a content creator or someone on Patreon. And personally, if I could use that feature right now, I probably wouldn't cancel after a month. Personally, and then there are a bunch of other primitives. More complex strategies can be enabled. And the best part for me is that you get to control the risk a lot better, because you can allocate any percentage of your yield to performing a specific action. So you have a knob and you can tune it all the way up and just, let's say, invest all of it or only like 10%. And so that is another thing. And I think lastly, another thing that I'm really excited about is the secondary market for chargeable tax credits, which does not exist. It's not legal. We're not creating it, but people are going to be able to donate. People are going to be able to optimize their taxes through giving, which is something that has existed for some time. But up until this point, you were not able to donate just the yield, which makes giving essentially free. Once you, I mean, if you don't consider opportunity cost and inflation, it is essentially free. And because we are tokenizing these tax receipts, so that you don't necessarily have to claim them right away, similar to how, what are those things called? Those entities, a donor advised fund. Yes, that is what it is. Similar to how they do it, you can essentially postpone the donation so that you can more effectively optimize your giving. So in a way that benefits your taxes for that specific year. So you're going to be able to do that. Because you have an NFT that you can burn, and the burn itself triggers the donation to the real world company. And, you know, these NFTs are like, you can trade them. You shouldn't. It's fraud. But we obviously cannot enforce anything. And, we see a future where these NFTs eventually spawn a secondary market, they become tradable, and very similar to carbon credits, individuals will be able to optimize their taxes. And I think the biggest side effect of this is that there's going to be, not only will there be more giving, but these not-for-profits will have to become more transparent, because, you know, I would not donate to a black box organization. I don't know what's happening with the money. And this is definitely a concern that many of us share, and especially in this space where the motto is trust but verify. And so I think this will also force these not-for-profits to become more transparent, increase their accountability, and it's really exciting. And these are just some of the primitives that I could come up with on the spot, some of the impact. There are many more in terms of like NFTs, because NFTs are illiquid assets, and like I said, you can use a project can use their treasury in order to allow value to accrue to a specific token or NFT. If NFTs become liquidity backed assets, then they can be added to money markets. If they can be added to money markets, they can be liquidated, but at the same time, they can also be borrowed and generate extra yield on top. So, you know, it triggers a bunch of cool things that are only possible because of composability and a very flexible modular architecture.
I'll also say, maybe somewhat unrelated to the original question, but as far as a market goes for trading NFT tax receipts, I don't think I can say very much on this, but I can say that we are very actively pursuing a route to making that a possibility in the near future, and working with representatives of the US government to explore that possibility. And I hope I'll be able to talk about that more in the future, but we're not, I don't think we were ready to announce it yet, but yeah, so it's something that we're really committed to as well. Yeah, but Kriptoshi, did you wanna, Crypto Beetle, did you wanna say something?
No, I just wanted to say good stuff, and I look forward to your development. So thank you.
Thank you.
Cool. So I just got a text from Chris that says my quality is trash. So I'm sorry if it's trash all of a sudden. But I know it's better now. Okay. Thank you, Chris. I see that I'm not going to read it out, but 0x4655 with sand clocks. I love it. I'm going to put you up there. And if you want to talk to us, you will have the stage.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, what's up? I guess I missed the transition where I got chosen to speak. I had a couple questions. First off, I guess before the questions, you guys are killing it. Spaces is really good. Definitely agree on the delay, et cetera. But the questions I kind of have around partnerships. Well, I have multiple questions. I think I want to focus my first question on kind of the partnerships that have been discussed in the mediums. That I've read and that have kind of been announced. And then maybe I can ask my second question if we had some time. But the question really is, like, I've seen kind of names like Wintermute, what else? Prism Protocol, et cetera, drop throughout all the Medium articles. I still want to understand, like, you know, A, how does the product launch delay kind of affect the partnerships? And B, you know, what kind of work is being done on those fronts? And will we get an insight onto it with the GitHub and the Jira open source?
Yeah. Okay. So I have to address each partnership individually because they accomplish different goals. With Wintermute, as you know, they are market makers. So Wintermute kindly provided some liquidity on Sushi, as did Sandclock, of course, and a couple of other people. Wintermute will also provide liquidity for when we get listed on centralized exchanges. They're going to be our market makers. When it comes to Prism, the goal is to use Prism to support proof of stake assets on Terra. Because as you know, right now the goal is to support stable coins. So now to address the other part of the question, when we launch, we will support stable coins and then we will introduce support for proof of stake assets using Prism. And the cool thing about Prism is that you're getting two tokens, you can actually get leverage on any one token. So you could get leverage exposure to the yield, for instance. And a couple of other things that also require Terra's ecosystem to mature. Right now, there isn't really a permissionless money market on Terra. That would help things tremendously on the yield generation side. For instance, our delta neutral strategy. We deposit UST to Anchor Protocol. We short a couple of mirrored assets, and then we buy the respective mirrored assets that we shorted. And then what? These assets are just sitting in the vault, not doing anything. And it would be much, much better to be able to deposit them to, let's say, Mass Protocol. And now they can be either used as collateral to generate more yield, by compounding, or by virtue of simply sitting there, the people are borrowing them, and generate and they're going to generate yield. So right now, I don't even think Prism is out yet, so it doesn't really matter much, because we can only integrate them after they've launched. So, you know, everything is fine and on track in that regard. There are other partnerships, like, for instance, Impossible Finance, and that one is, I think, a little simpler to deal with, because once we launch, basically, we'll be able to do what we set out to do with them, and also deploy on other L2s. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Impossible Finance, but they focus mostly on L2s, optimistic L2s, and I think Binance Smart Chain. So once those ecosystems are more developed in terms of yield generation, and when I say yield generation, I don't just mean like random farming. I mean relatively sustainable yield generation, structured products, options, money markets, and so on. Once they're more mature, then yeah, we will definitely go there as well to generate more yield, to make it programmable, and to essentially allow DAOs to use us to correlate their TVL and their treasury size with their token price.
Notion should give you definitely more insight into this, but just to kind of give you an idea, like, generally how we deal with partnerships and building to support partnerships. Like, obviously, ultimately, our priority is building our product, because the partnerships don't mean much if we don't have a product. And then generally, it's some obviously more complex than this. There are more conversations that support these decisions. But generally, like, we have conversations with our tech team about where they have kind of time and space, because, you know, we have different types of developers. So not all of our developers are always working on pressing issues. And so when they have time and space in their kind of workload, then we kind of will look at our partnerships list and figure out what we want to start building out and make some progress on those. So that's kind of generally how we do that. And like I said, it's obviously a little bit more complex than that, how we determine what gets prioritized and what gets pushed back. But that's kind of the gist of it. And yeah, but you said you had other questions as well, so if you want to ask anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. I mean, very informative response for sure. Good to hear. I think, yeah, the main kind of gist in the next set of questions, or the next question, I guess, and you guys can probably expound on it. There is sort of stuff in the pitch video, promotional materials, et cetera, about regulatory compliance, right? Like, and I saw some questions that were asked kind of in the Discord around it. And I saw that the legal person, or the, you know, the chief legal officer, whatever, the person who handles all that was tagged in it. And I was kind of, you know, expecting to see some sort of, or excited to see a response there. Now, I don't really remember which regulations were being asked about, but just generally speaking, is that still, how do I say this? It's probably, I don't want to phrase it a yes or no question, because most obvious answer is yes, like you guys are still thinking about it, but what does the progress look like on that front, from like a regulatory compliance standpoint? How difficult does that kind of look like, country to country, state to state, if you're looking at the states, et cetera? And do you have any updates for us there?
Yeah, it's that's a very, very tricky question. I mentioned minutes ago that we are working, I think Elizabeth did actually, that we are working with regulators in order to essentially be able to create a secondary market for charitable tax receipts. So that is one way in which we are tackling this subject. And then, of course, we, as you know, we are undergoing our SOC audits, SOC 1 and SOC 2 Type 2, because, you know, it increases the trust that institutions place on us. But it's not necessarily compliance. I mean, it is necessary for institutional adoption, I think, but it's not necessarily a compliance thing. How we are handling it, you know, that is a little trickier, and I do not feel comfortable saying it without Alex present. And Alex, our chief legal officer, he just got married, so is relaxing somewhere out there in a nice tropical paradise.
Yeah, it's such a shame, because usually Alex would always be on this call. Like, he's always in our Twitter spaces, and he could have jumped in, but he literally got married this weekend and he's on his honeymoon right now, so he's not around. But
yeah, I think
sorry, that was me. I just hit mute everyone by accident, Chris, but if you speak now, yeah, it should be good.
I think it's worth noting that the best possible strategy, and this is the direction which we want to go, is if I'm not sure if you're familiar with what Uniswap is doing, but basically they decoupled the main entity and from the actual smart contract. So essentially you have Uniswap Labs, and they develop for Uniswap, and now it is considered sufficiently decentralized that regulatory risk is quite low, because regulators, even though they're not super technical, they are still aware that these are immutable, in most cases, smart contracts. And once deployed, we cannot destroy them. So the answer to your question is we are going to push decentralization much more aggressively, because ultimately Sandflock does not generate yield. Sandflock pursues yield, but we are not the generators. We are not the money markets. If we deposit to Anchor Protocol, it is Anchor Protocol that is generating yield through interest, and not Sandflock. Sandflock is just sourcing these opportunities. That is basically it. Decentralization, making sure that we are not a centralized product, and that Sandflock's team is only responsible for development, but not necessarily for making the decisions. That is going to get offloaded to the community very soon, and I honestly can't wait for that. It's going to be a huge weight off our shoulders as well, to be able to, to be decentralized and not liable for running smart contracts, so to speak. And I say this in quotes because it's obviously wrong, but it is what regulators seem to think at times, that we control the smart contracts completely. And in most cases, projects do through trusted front backends, but we will try to decentralize, and everything will be for the community, by the community. The governance will decide how to upgrade the contracts and so on.
And if this is something that you all are interested in, like I said, Alex is on his honeymoon this week, so it's not really going to be in most of our meetings and stuff, but I can definitely ask him. I'm sure he would be totally happy to jump on a Twitter Spaces at some point in the near future and just talk exclusively about, you know, regulations and compliance and kind of the route we're taking and the path we're taking to get there. I'm sure he would be more than willing to do that. So I can definitely schedule that in the near future. 0x4655. Did you have any other questions?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is my address, I guess. Yeah, I have one last one. I've been thinking about this since you guys, your guys' space with, I think it was like a few Chinese investors. A lot of it was in Mandarin. But during that space, you did talk about Sandclock, or people, other teams and projects, et cetera, being able to build on top of Sandclock. And I'm a developer. You know, what that really sounds like to me is there is an SDK or a set of APIs I can import into my code or whatever, and then call and interact with Sandclock as a platform. And that's how I plug into Sandclock. Am I thinking about it right? I guess the first question, the second question is, if that's the case, you know, when would developers be able to kind of build on top of Sandclock using your guys' SDKs?
That was a really good question, and Cristiano's, I think, wants to answer it because he gets really excited about this, but he's going to speak on my account, just so you know, because his phone died. So again,
the answer is definitely yes. That's the goal. We even have a grants program. If you look at our tokenomics, we assigned quartz so that people will build using Sandclock. So all the stuff that I mentioned, like the DAO-to-DAO tools, yes, we will create some. We will create the templates for them, but we cannot create everything. And like the lossless platforms, the subscription platforms, all of that stuff, that is great. And we, if you want to build it, we will give you a grant. But yeah, that is very much the goal, to have people build using Sandclock.
Yeah, because there's so much you can build with Sandclock, and like Cristiano said, obviously, like, we're focusing on building this product that others can build on top of, and like, there's no way that we would have the resources, even just the people, to build all of these other ideas on top of. So that's why we're trying to encourage others to do that. So yeah, I really hope, if that's something that you're interested in, like, even now, even though we don't have a product out yet for you to actually pursue this route, if you want to reach out to me or Cristiano, like, we would love to talk with you about this. Cause like I said, this, especially Cristiano, he gets very excited talking about this. Sometimes I have to cut him off sometimes, because he'll just talk about it for the whole Twitter spaces. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. That for sure. I'd love to reach out. I guess the last question on this point, it's a really small one, is when you guys open source your GitHub, will I be able to see developer documentation, etc., as a third party developer who wants to build, or like, is that not, am I getting ahead of myself? Like, is that coming down the roadmap?
Documentation. I was adding wood to the fireplace.
Yeah, I'm making lots of noise, so I couldn't hear that. Well, can you repeat your question? I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I think the question essentially was that, like, if I want to use someone else's API to kind of plug into their platform, I would go find their docs. And they have some language-specific bindings, et cetera, whatever. Would that be something you guys are going to provide soon? Like, when you open source the GitHub, does that exist, essentially? Or is that something that's coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, it's pipeline. That being said, some products do not necessarily need that, because you're just basically redirecting your yield or part of it to something, and that is very, very simple to do. But obviously, for more complex interactions with other smart contracts, then yeah, you need a template, and you need obviously documentation to support yep. that.
Cool. Absolutely. Awesome. Thanks for letting me speak for so long. I'm good. I'll let someone else go ahead.
Of course, that was good.
Oh, I was just speaking and it was muted, guys. I'm really sorry. I was just saying that these have been really good questions. I'm really happy with the questions you guys brought, and the conversation that you all brought. I think this is maybe a good time to close it out. It was recorded, so if you came late or if you want to send it to someone or something, we recorded it this time, so you'll be able to do that. And like I always am saying this every time we do this, but like happy to have more of these. Like these are fun. I like them. I know Cristiano likes them because you love talking about Sandblock.
But now Elizabeth is gonna make me cheesecake, so.
Yes, we're gonna go make a nice anti-inflammatory pumpkin cheesecake. So, and get a good night of sleep. So, anyway, guys, thank you so much, everybody who listened, and also for those who asked questions and tuned in.
Thank you for all your support.
Yeah, it was. I just can't say it enough.
Frustrating for everybody.
This last week, last Friday, was very humbling and in a really nice way, where I felt really supported by this community and really loved and embraced and uplifted. And that I honestly did not expect that. Not because of it's just not usually what you see in general when you bring bad news to the table. And it made me really, really happy and made me really optimistic about the future. And what this community is going to help us accomplish collectively and together, working toward this goal and to really create a product that's going to be around for another 10 years. And like I said, maybe another 100 years. So thank you, everybody, really, from the bottom of our hearts. Anyway, I am going to... Oh, I see you... Tot1A, I see you requested... I'm closing it now. So if you want to message me or Cristiano, feel free to do so, or Sandclock's account too. You can message us and we will, or even ask publicly if you want to just tag Sandclock and ask your question and we'll answer it. And hopefully we'll get you in the next one. So yeah, thank you so much, everybody. And we will talk to you all next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the Sandclock Dev Space, recorded on Monday, January 24th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra and is the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol and is refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. For more information, check out WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates their support. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Stepping on the concrete where the rocks meet. Nighttime special ops flushing out the raw meat. If you think you want beef, think again promptly. Oddly, the bombs never dropped on the party. Probably the odds were too damn alarming. Disarming the population, that's a hard feat. Hardly break up the booze and the drugs. Wait till the bodies drop, then roll up the rugs. Raise up an army of suicide Barbies. Never bring a plastic knife to a gun battle. Gotta praise mommy for the do or die heartbeat. Gave up killing, now she's back in the saddle. Better pick a side, let them go gather. When the dogs of war are out looking for their master, feeling all wore out like a blood donor. But they wouldn't take it, didn't have the right aroma. When the enemy strikes, you better have a flashlight. Never have I seen darker days in my life. Everyone got a handout, looking for a pardon. Me, I'm just lucky, I found a good partner. The look on their face when the shit got started. A bunch of dead bodies, dearly departed. It's merely an art form made out of cardboard. Got a brain and the headed blood pumping heart for. Keeping everything saturated like a drugstore. Fighting through the lines like a blood sport of sorts. Just trying to get enough food to live. Can't grow your own when you're living in the shit. In the midst of all this, we never got our shit together long enough to sit and think about the bigger picture. Whether or not we ever had to run the risk, rather be a carrier gorilla in the mist.
Well, we need to remember that this virus will pass, but the decisions that we make today in this atmosphere will last. We will have to live with them, our children will have to live with them, all of our posterity will. It's not just about America. It's not just about your city. It's about everywhere.
Terra Spaces.